in order to excavate with their special equipment, the Itibirayans had placed these selected Indian friends near strategic waterways and swamp passages as guards. The Itibirayans had known these men already since their first landing near Pucallpa. The amazing thing I discovered was the age of these Indians. All over 50 years, looking as healthy and young as those Indians being only 20 or 25. And another controversy. Had they been used as human guinea pigs by the Itibirayans? Siti never wanted to talk much about the subject, but she did tell me all about Lenny's Elan. Because of their extremely sensitive navigational equipment, the Itibirayans found out that the secret of ancient South America, this uncompleted manuscript of human history, lies within the walls of many megalithic edifices and temples, fortresses and of powerful civilization unknown to us. How many brave explorers like Colonel Percy Harrison Fawcett have tried in vain to penetrate this veil, prepared to face hardship and found death. As one famous Portuguese explorer wrote, it was to conquer the empire of the Incas. This was not so as regards the region east of the Andes, known commonly as the Amazon jungles. Owing to the impenetrable forest which cover its surface. There, these men of iron had to struggle against obstacles such as an almost impenetrable growth, aided at times by human beings as barbarous as nature itself. Wide and tricky rivers, torrent capable of destroying anything which resisted them. Hungry wild beasts, gigantic and poisonous reptiles, insects no less dangerous and more troublesome than the reptiles. Inaccessible mountains of those slopes, every step carried its risk. No of going over the precipice, no of being bitten by a venomous serpent or by one of the millions of equally poisonous ants, limitless forests, immense lagoons, swamps, torrential rains, in inundations of enormous extent. But in many important respects, these words of the historian are exaggerated. Between Cusco and the Brazilian highlands, the Itibirayans discovered 7 recognized military trails constructed many thousands of years ago. One of these trails led to Lenny's Elan, the lost city, the Rome of South America. No people are less racial and prejudiced or more friendly disposed towards all human beings as the Itibirayans. Healing the Indians, they made friends with them forever. And the Indians, far from feeling inferior to them, regard the out-of-space people as their friends. Parentheses, why a noise must beating not just human beings is a suggestion of superiority. End of parentheses. With the help of their Indian friends, as it explained, Lenny's Land was discovered on October 15, 1966, over time. The ETB Rains explorers had been excavating for several months until the 1st February 1967. They opened the principal temple of Lenny's Land and found the religious symbol of a flying man from out of space. Many generations of Indians and many of North American tourists have been imitations of this pre-Columbian symbol without knowing its real meaning. But to have discovered this image within the Lenny's Land temple must have been the fantastic proof that many thousands of years ago, another civilization from outer space had first landed on this lonely planet Earth. Not Columbus discovered America, but the ancient Vikings. Not Mr. Hua or Mr. Satura discovered planet Earth, but a much earlier team of astronauts. Still today, I do not know what the ETB Rains were celebrating that unforgettable day of February 67. What did the Indians celebrate? CT tried to explain. Seemingly, she told me again and again that everyone of the crew felt happy because of the similar symbol they had on one of their control panels inside the craft. And indeed, she showed this to me the next day. I found out that through the study of millions of religious symbols, the ETB Rains had been able to solve the controversy about God, and with it the question as to whether the universe is a creation of a personal God, or whether God itself is the universe. Not because of the geological, astrological and intercosmic science, nor because of dimensional theories or theological dogmas, but simply because of the most unbelievable collection of millions of religious symbols and their analysis, did the ETB Rains form their so-called cosmophilosophy or cosmic religion, which they believe to be the zenith of religious truth and wisdom. What the Lenny's Land symbol really stands for, I was only finding out superficially. The deeper meaning I can only guess. The Lenny's Land symbol, I feel, represents life creating new matter. That much I understood. Also that it became the religious symbol of God nature. The question of what ETB Rains really believed to be God nature, what their moral and ethical laws are, their prayers, their social behavior, etc., I was only surmising at the time. Not until near the end of my stay was I to be informed. Here then a footnote in this chapter. I remember in particular one beautiful design symbol in the health center of the spacecraft. I forgot to note the name. The symbol showed a man hand protecting a woman's breast on which a baby was feeding. The symbol explains, they said, the mystery of human violence and man's highest duty, to protect women and children from violence. take a look at the time around 10 minutes. I go on to the next chapter, which is chapter 12, the discovery of Guayaba. Shortly after dawn on the 20th of February 67, I was told by Citi that my friends had decided to take a short break from their routine work as planters and go on another explanation trip. Looking through my diary notes, I found an entry about being a bit worried over my return to Lima. I knew I was overdue in the Peruvian capital and that a backlog of work was waiting for me, especially where the installation of some machinery in the port of Callao was concerned. But in the short time I had been in the Miriam River base, I had become so fascinated with everything these people did that the idea of spending a few days with them on another adventure really fascinated me. Secretly, I wondered, as already in Indian Lima, what would happen to them if one of their men and women were arrested. Little did I know, besides the fact that Citi used a perfectly imitated Argentine passport, that all Itibirains know exactly what to do and what not to do. For instance, in many countries, it is useless to show a passport if this passport does not show an entry stamp from the airport police. On the trip to Colombia, Satura decided not to use passports at all, but to proceed at night and only stay a very limited time at a place where the chances of detection were absolutely out of question. All day during the 20th of February, I had stayed inside the control craft, experimenting with one of the iGenerator's historical computers, waiting for the departure time. We finally left at about 10 p.m. after we all had a last vegetarian meal. The extremely short crisscross of a great altitude and distance was a disappointment, exactly like on the first flight near Hiyanacayo to the river base. I did not notice, see, hear or feel anything at all, but I did observe and with the utmost interest the immediate and very clever control craft protection carried out in the darkness of what I was able to understand to be a huge delta swamp of the Magdalena River south of Barranquilla, Colombia. Within seconds, the spacecraft had covered itself with a special liquid coming out of a million pores, which, besides being a perfect element of camouflage and natural coloring, also served as bacteria and insect repelling agent. This only lasted about 5 to 10 minutes. When finished, we immediately embarked in two very comfortably and very flat speed boats. These boats, on both sides and on the bottom, were propelled by a tinian silent generators. There was no motor at all, but a great number of air jets working in absolute silence. I figured the speed of about 30 to 35 miles per hour, and the trip itself lasted well over 1 hour. Because of the wonderful night temperature, everybody seemed to enjoy this traveling down the Magdalena River. And I think that 45 miles per hour, it's about 60 to 65 kilometers per hour. Well, go on. The ETB Rains carried their beautiful carved drinking gadgets, and even though they never offered me a drink, they always had three little containers given to me to carry for my personal use. I was only able to speak to Mr. Saturan as he had not received clearance to join the party at all. The party and all the other crew members did not carry language computers. The exception, of course, I found out later, was Mr. Hua. Approaching the port of Barranquilla at about 11 p.m., we found an isolated spot with wild hedges covering the river embankment. In spite of the moonlight, it was a dark night. Dogs howled, not a ship steered on the broad waters of the river. Camp were pitched on a sandy strip over the waterline in a break of the undergrowth. Most of the ETB Ryans wanted to rest and observe the neighborhood. But Satura decided to visit the night market of this, the largest coastal town of Colombia. Like most large towns in South American republics, it is busy nightlife. The markets, for example, keep open until there isn't a customer left to buy. Most markets have their fair share of fruit and soft drink vendors. It must have been at 11:30 p.m. when we arrived at one of the filthiest markets I have ever seen. Rotten fruit and banana leaves were strewn all over the street, but there seemed to be a large selection of fruit and drinks on the stalls. That was good. We might find something different here, something to the Itibirayan taste, I thought, with a sarcastic sense of humor. The display of fruit is one of the features of Colombian, I told Satura. Undoubtedly, we will find something to interest you. Satura went from fruit stall to fruit stall, making a minute inspection of the fruit that was offered for sale. No market seller all over the world always has the same thing in common. They don't like customers touching and inspecting their goods, turning over the stock without buying anything, so as to prevent any scene that might be embarrassing. To my friend, I rummaged in my pocket and found some Peruvian coins that, besides some bills I had left from the time I was in Lima. These I handed to Satura. Ferentes, he had no money of his own, and I told him to buy what he wanted. Satura displayed naivety that was astounding for one so astute as himself. He inspected the fruit, turning and prodding, but he did not buy anything. Instead, he offered a small stall seller money merely for the privilege of inspecting the stock, smiled politely, then moved on to the next stall. Each stallholder accepted the money with alacrity and did not press any fruit on Satura. I suppose they look upon the money as a tip given to them by an eccentric foreigner. I'm sure they must have thought Satura is a typical American gringo. We wandered through the town and found one or two other smaller markets. Suddenly, my nostrils were assailed by the most heavenly aroma, that of roasting chicken. All the longing for good solid food came back to me. I had been living with it to be rains the yet. Mark you, I was fit enough on it, but I recently had this craving for solid, homely good food. The smell of the roasting chicken brought on that longing once more. I soon traced the heavenly smell down to its source. A chicken roaster had set up his stall in the corner of one of the smaller markets. Half a dozen chickens were turning on spits over glowing charcoal fire, coal fire. I reached in my pocket for my wallet, extracted a 50 sol Peruvian bill, and gave the Colombian chicken roaster a lesson in Peruvian currency. We agreed that the bill was the equivalent of about 30 pesos, more than enough to buy half a succulent chicken, which the man proceeded to hand me. The chicken roasting Colombian even gave me 3 pesos bills of his money, and immediately, with a muttered word of apology to Satura, I ate the half chicken there and then. I was ravenous. Never had the chicken tasted so good as in that marketplace, with the night sky above and Satura by my side. As I tore strips by juicy breasts from a half chicken, I reckon it took me about as long as to eat that half chicken as the voyage to the river had taken, about 5 to 7 minutes. Satura was amazed at the caveman's gluttony, for that was what it was. Then I saw a look of sadness cross his face. I knew what he was thinking, that it was a crime to kill a bird just for a human being to eat it. At that moment, I must confess, I was out of sympathy with Itibirain philosophy. All I was interested in was picking the bones clean. What was it Cervantes said? See if you can find a knife and look out for one or two chickens, and then good appetite. A knowing bird, that Cervantes. A knowing bird, that Cervantes. Well, I just didn't trouble about a knife. Only Satura, know this approving look spoiled the pleasure of that half chicken. Soon after, we left the chicken stall and ran into Mr. Hua. He told us that he found himself unable to sleep and had therefore followed us to the market, hoping to meet up with us. They asked if I knew about another market open that late, and I replied that I remembered from a previous visit to Barranquilla that I had seen one down by a beautiful church. So we went there, and it was in this market that we came across the Guanyaba. This proved to be the only fruit on sale in Barranquilla that was not known to my friend from Itibira too. "Have you tasted this fruit?" Satura questioned me. "Yes, It has a bittersweet flavor, really delightful. I also mentioned that the Guayaba has a lot of seeds, which make it less popular than it otherwise would be. But it is fit for consumption, Satura wanted. No, it was a question. But is it fit for consumption? Satura wanted to know. I said, many people make a drink from it rather than to go to the trouble of eating the fruit. In this respect, it is like an ordinary orange or lemon. It is not difficult to cultivate. They both wanted to know immediately, and I told them, I think not, although I'm not an expert. I do know that it grows all the way from Mexico down through the Central America countries to the north of Peru. Very fair spread. With this, my friend seemed to be satisfied and decided to take it back to the plantation laboratories. Again, I had to pay this time for the change for the chicken. They chose the most perfect fruit, but then Satura asked me if I could not find the specimens of the Guayaba tree. This was an impossible thing, as it was past midnight and most of the fruit sellers were beginning to close their stands. Nevertheless, we spent an hour or so wandering through the night market of Barranquilla looking for a plant dealer, but without success. It seemed as my friend never got tired. I was feeling sleepy and therefore suggested that we return to a temporary camp, have a few hours sleep, and then resume the search for a plant dealer in the morning. I'm up very early in the morning. Shipping was already shuffling on its way to Magdalena. I had no objection of being found camped out on the embarkment, but I thought it might embarrass my Itabirayan friends if they were. So I woke the rest of the camp. Within a short time, they all were safely inside the two boats. With the exception of the guard on duty, they had all had a good night rest. They just never worried to be being detected. Of course, the security measures are entirely different in Colombia as in India. The Tibetans did not dare to enter Barranquilla during daytime. Perhaps they had stayed the night just to keep me my company. Then we have come to the top of page 126 on the left corner of the book. It's nearly half an hour, so I stop this part here, continues on another part then.